So be louder.
No, not
if I talk louder, I'm correct.
Talk normally, you asshat.
Unfortunately, my normal is loud.
That is true. Welcome to the Survivor Turning Back Time podcast, the only Survivor podcast that takes a little shopping trip over to the Stealth R Us, or the No Walls Mart, or the Marshall Hide in the Field. I'm your host, Stephen Levine, with my co-host, Jared Sheldon. Jared.
That was pretty good.
Thank you.
That was pretty good.
We'll play on words.
Yeah. You know what you were Googling? I was like, what could he possibly be Googling?
Department stores.
I was trying to think if there's one who's Sears, but I don't think there is. Hide in the Harbor Freight.
Sears, what you're doing.
No one's Home Depot.
Ooh, I like that.
Thank you.
Nice. How's it going, Jared?
You go first. How was your trip?
That was good. I'm very tan, obviously, as you can tell.
Only a little bit.
Oh, did I? I was joking in that nothing has changed.
Oh, I mean, you are a little, either that or you said it and it just became my reality.
Sure.
I am, and I have recently learned my lesson. I will stop telling people this. Shockingly easy to gaslight.
Heard.
I have a bad memory.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to think I'm fairly agreeable, and at least about things that I don't feel like deeply passionate about.
Okay.
And I don't have a good sense of some things, like, is that how tan Steven always is? And you said that, and I went, guess not.
You've probably seen me at my tannest when we were doing the stunt show together.
When we were outdoors constantly.
Outdoors every single day. Yeah.
That will do it.
My hair gets really blonde in the sun.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the end of the summer, I looked like I had bleached my hair. It's crazy.
You're so Minnesotan.
I'm so Minnesotan, all right? Hey.
How was the canyon?
It was grand.
Hell yeah. Does it live up to the hype?
It gorgeous canyon. Like, it's beautiful. I would recommend everyone once in their life go see it.
I love that the two of you went on a week-long trip to some of like the most beautiful nature America has to offer, and you sent me one picture, which was inside of a two-story Taco Bell.
I wasn't sending people pictures.
No, I know.
To be fair, it wasn't just you. I sent nobody pictures. Although I did post one thing on Instagram. That's it. Here is a panorama I did of the Grand Canyon. It's real pretty.
I can only imagine how pretty it is in person, because I know that every single picture I've ever taken of a like landscape or like beautiful nature, I'm like, this has no depth.
Yeah,
you can't tell how beautiful it actually is.
I can't wait to upload this to my VR headset though, so that I can just like look through. Panoramas and VR headsets are cool.
You were there.
I was, and I took a really cool photo.
You did take a really cool photo.
Yeah.
You might be the only person that still uses their VR headset.
Debatable.
Except for porn. Except for people that are using it for porn.
I can't argue with this, but sure, I don't know. Somebody has to use it for mini golf.
Oh, that's true.
What else do you need?
And Half-Life Alyx.
Mini golf and porn and Half-Life Alyx.
The three major food groups.
Okay, funny story here. We're 3 miles down the canyon. Like, you have to, all the signs are like, be careful. If you're going down, remember, you have to come back up.
Yeah.
So if you're feeling tired now, just remember, it's going to be way worse going the other direction.
And you were with the sleepiest person I've ever met.
Oh, yes. And I wasn't worried about them. They hike. They know what they're doing. I was like, okay, this better go well. I was actually pretty okay. I've been at least...
Fucker, you've ran a marathon.
I've been working out enough that it was not a problem. However, at the 3 mile mark, there was a little rest area. At this rest area, there was I'm going to call him a ground squirrel because I don't know what he was. He was a big fat ass squirrel, but no trees to live in.
Wait, Alina from Nicaragua was there?
What?
Remember Benry called her a dirt squirrel or something like that? Anyway.
There you go.
There's a throwback.
Dirt squirrel. Nice. Okay. I got there. This, all the signs are like, don't feed nature. Don't feed the animals. This squirrel, unashamed, walked up to us like was this close to me. I have a video of it trying to rummage through my backpack.
Hilarious.
Like, it gets stuck in the handle of my backpack because it is that unafraid of me.
So that squirrel's a paid actor to show why you're not supposed to feed the animals.
So then we take our stuff because, like, we got to get the fuck away from this squirrel, and we got to turn around because we don't want to be here forever. We go around, and there's a sign that says, "Don't get bit," and has a picture of that exact kind of squirrel. Like,
maybe of that squirrel.
Maybe I should have looked at that prior to being in there.
That's pretty good.
Just funny. So funny.
I get so mad when I see people feeding pigeons.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I don't know. I have a lot of people in my life, a weird number of people in my life, that love pigeons. That are, like, it's really become sort of a certain sect of the queer community's mascot for reasons that are unexplained to me.
Okay.
But don't feed them. Because then they don't... Then they take up sidewalks and don't move.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, sure... Whatever, you can have your arguments that they are noble birds. I'm not gonna die on that hill, but also I don't really want to touch them either because they're kind of gross and sit in sewage.
Yeah, you shouldn't go around touching or eating pigeons.
Birds in general are just like they can give you diseases and things, so I don't want them near me. And maybe that's not true. Maybe I've been fed propaganda, anti-bird propaganda, but I am a hypochondriac and I don't so to the little old lady on my street that feeds the pigeons, stop
doing it.
She's definitely a listener of this podcast.
I was going to send this to you and I don't think I did. For everyone who is not Jared, we went to Arizona, we went to Grand Canyon, and then flew out of Vegas on the way back. We had one night in Vegas. In my hotel, there were these two advertisements back to back, and I said, the duality of man.
So it is a place called Rocks, which is Sexy Topless Review, and BattleBots Destructathon.
The duality of man.
The fact that you went to Vegas and did not go to BattleBots makes me mad.
It didn't exist. There was nowhere to go to it, Jared.
You should have planned your trip better.
No.
I said this before we started recording, but BattleBots has been in like a televised version of it. They have these Vegas Destructathons. They've had those for the entire time since the show's been back. But the show's been stuck in limbo because of the Time Warner bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was on Discovery Plus /HBO. I saw a rumor that somebody's picking it up. And, I hope that's true. Oh, I want that to be true so bad, Steven. I want BattleBots back so bad.
It's got
to
be Netflix, right? Like, that fits so much in their niche.
I don't remember what stream platform it was.
Or Paramount.
I don't remember, but I think the major sponsor of it is unfortunately an AI company, which is I mean, of course it was. And, like, listen, let's not pretend that the other sponsors of BattleBots over the years have been all saints, but okay.
This is how we train the robots that kill us all.
Yeah, maybe.
With AI BattleBots.
You know what? That's a cooler dystopia than the one we live in right now, so at this point, I'll take it.
All right. You know what else I'll take? Emails. If you want to email us, feel free to do so, survivortbt@gmail.com, or you can message us on Reddit, /survivortbt. Go to our Reddit page, r/survivortbtpod. Thank you, we got there eventually. Or follow us on Patreon, give us $1, watch us do shit.
Give us your fucking money, give us your fucking cash.
We got 3 emails today. First one from Josh. Josh says, ignoring the actual format of Redemption Island, what are your thoughts about eliminated players getting a second chance at all?
I just don't know how to do it. I think it's a novel idea, but I don't... Like, unless you set up a third tribe that they get voted onto, I just don't see how you can pull this off. I don't like the look you just gave me when I said that.
That is exactly what happened in Pearl Islands. But
they weren't because they weren't still in the game.
Yeah.
So that, like, if somebody could hypothesize a better format than the one that we currently have, I think it could be cool to play with. But I, without, like, barring that, it's just like, well, okay. The devil is in the details.
Mm-hmm. God, man, that feels like a fever dream right now. Just thinking about the outcasts winning and then going and voting Will back into this game.
Yeah. it's weird. Like, that's maybe even, like, for TV, not for the integrity of the game, better than Redemption Island. Because right now, Redemption Island, the concept, is nothing. It's just Matt beating people one at a time. Maybe it should have been, like, win three and you're back in or something. I don't know.
I assume neither of you kept up with watching The Amazing Race or Big Brother, but having players get a second chance on those shows is fairly common. The Australian version of Survivor also regularly lets contestants re-enter the game as well, which has always divided fan opinion. It doesn't bother me on those shows because it's been a part of them since the beginning, but it always feels weird for me with Survivor because it feels unnatural.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing, and that in Amazing Race and Big Brother, you aren't literally surviving, and so much of the show that we don't see on camera because it's boring is the survival aspect, and you take that away, and it's like, well, the hard part you got to skip.
Amazing Race is weird because sometimes they're just like, oh, sorry, this wasn't actually an elimination leg, so you're good. You were set up to be eliminated, but you're not.
Which, like, that's fine, because that's the equivalent of just, like, not having a vote.
Mm-hmm.
That's like when Russell Swan went out in Samoa and they went to tribal and then they didn't vote somebody out. Like,
I would argue it's the equivalent of them going to tribal council, voting, and then saying, actually, surprise, I dropped these votes. Nobody's going home today.
Well, you know what? No, I'm gonna change it slightly differently. It's like playing an entire immunity challenge and then not having a tribal. Because Amazing Race isn't choosing who goes home. It's a competition.
Sure.
Without consequences at that point. Whereas, like, that's a vote that everyone said and then no.
Yeah. You just have to assume there are consequences.
Yeah.
I'll just say, players with idols always get a ton of flack from fans, no matter what they do with idols. It's very easy to say what to do with the idol from the couch when you have the perfect info.
Yes.
Yes. Agreed.
I try to be more generous to people who have idols for that very reason, because you have to think through what is the alternative in that situation, and oftentimes it is, if you play it early, it's go home.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you get voted out within your pocket, it's, I'm screwed next week, and I thought I was safe this time, so yeah.
I don't. I will absolutely couch coach on this one.
But there are some that are so inexcusable. Yeah. I mean, James from China will always be the example. Yeah. You had two.
You had two, and you chose to use none. From Michael C., Michael's Redemption Island episode 2 and 3 email. I feel like it's really hard to talk about this season early on because the narrative flow is all messed up. It does get better as they go along and figure it out how to edit it. Jared mentions that they probably should have just changed the whole format of the season so that it goes up to a duel instead of ending at Tribal Council. And I think that could have worked, except you would need to get through 2 whole tribals, essentially 2 hours of television, first to get to that point.
2-hour premiere.
Unless they pulled a Palau and immediately sent 2 people to Redemption Island without even getting a chance to play.
Oh, that would have been such a dick move.
Which would suck. I agree. I think that would suck, and I hate even the idea of it. I think the show is beholden to the format where each episode has to end with a torch snuff, and that impacts why they kept it the way or that way, along with the logistical challenges of doing a 2.5-hour premiere and having a shorter episode count. But
that's fair.
Chalk some of this up to early installment weirdness as they work the kinks out of the twist. But anyway, some fun facts about the early season. Much like the last few seasons, Russell fed spoilers to his favorite online personality, except this time, because he was embarrassed so badly, he gave him fake spoilers.
That's funny, actually.
In these fake spoilers, Rob was the first boot when Kimbo Slice gets an idol played on him by Carrie Prejean, a model, in case you didn't know. When neither of them showed up as the surprise 19th or 20th players in the premiere, this spoiler was immediately debunked, tanking Miss Ye, the poster Russell gave the info to, credibility.
Okay.
That's funny. Kimbo Slice.
That's ridiculous. I actually really like the narrative, not the structure of the episodes, to be clear, but like the storytelling in Redemption Island so far, when we're in the camps and not at Redemption Island, is quite good.
Mm-hmm.
Shockingly good.
I may be wrong, but do I recall that Ralph did tell someone, maybe Mike and Sarita, about the idol and they split it still because they were worried that producers would have hidden a second idol just for Russell?
I don't remember seeing that in the episode, but maybe there's behind the scenes. I'm not entirely sure.
I don't know either.
I feel pretty confident that wasn't in the episode that Russell gets voted out, but who's to say?
Of seasons that I have any backstory for, this is certainly not one of them. Mm. As far as I know, Julie never actually considered flipping, even if she didn't like the idea of throwing the challenge.
Okay. That makes sense from everything else we've seen from Julie, to be honest.
Yeah. One thing I do like about this season is that the alliance lines are pretty easy to talk about, but there are definitely factions within the Six on Zapatero that come into focus more as the season goes along. I mean, we're seeing it right now.
Yeah, episode 6.
And on Ometepe, it's basically Rob's alliance versus Christina and kind of Andrea and Philip on the periphery.
Yeah, who's on the bottom between Andrea and Philip is an open question.
Yeah. Finally, I definitely agree with Jared that the early part of Redemption Island is good for all of its structural flaws. I hope he continues to enjoy it as we get into an interesting stretch on the season that a lot of people have opinions on. And thank God someone else who finds Stephanie too much in episode 3. It's all very pick me and cringe. Not that Krista is a whole lot better, but we see less of her. Anyways, great content as always, fellas.
Thank you. Yeah, Stephanie, I like a lot now. But that episode 3 is rough.
And our final email from Josh. Josh says, Russell let his obsession with losing Survivor destroy his life. He is pretty constantly drunk while posting on social media. That is true. Sending out hate to Survivor or certain contestants. He is divorced from his wife and blames Survivor for causing him to have trust issues.
Okay.
I feel like it was always there, but all right. He had a reality show about the life of him and his family called Holding Hands, which flopped.
Hey, we're not watching that. That's not going to be a bonus episode.
Nah. His brother got expelled from Big Brother for headbutting someone.
I saw that season.
Survivor generally will ignore a contestant's toxic behavior as long as they are popular enough. But for Russell, he just got too toxic to come back.
Yeah, that makes sense. And, like, I would be interested to hear, maybe we should have asked people, honestly, that we've interviewed, like, what is it like coming back in terms of, like, trust issues and stuff? Like, I think there is something there that's interesting, but, like, you also have to own your own shit, dude. Like, it's been years. And I don't know when he divorced his wife, but, like, you had a lot of time to get past that. And, like, therapy? Like, I don't know.
I know people have asked about this in the past, but since you are quickly approaching the point where it may become possible chronologically, I was wondering what both of your thoughts would be on taking a break from U.S. Survivor to cover a season of Australian Survivor. It would be interesting for you to cover a different version of the show with a different host, culture, and format. It would make it so you don't catch up to the U.S. version as quickly, and it would also be an opportunity for the both of you to be on equal footing in terms of your knowledge about the show, which would make for an interesting change.
What the fuck do you mean as quickly? We got like 5 or 6 years till that happens.
It could maybe be something you put up to a vote on Patreon to see if other people are interested in it.
Yeah, I mean, it's something. What season numbers did Australia start coming out? Like, what American Survivor season around?
Again, I don't have all of the cards on Australian Survivor. I believe that around this area is like maybe in like a year or two from where we're airing right now.
Okay.
Is when Australian Survivor starts. But then I believe there's a gap in the middle. Okay. Where they just stop doing it and then they bring it back.
That could be interesting. Yeah, we could. We'll probably talk about it off mic, or you know, maybe put up a vote or something. Maybe even on the subreddit instead of the Patreon.
Yeah.
So people that aren't on the Patreon, I mean, we want everyone to be on the Patreon, but like, I don't want to like financially gatekeep like voting for what we're going to be doing with the free feed. I don't know.
It could be a thing that we post on the Patreon as like additional content, because it's not what our show is about.
Yeah, that's true.
But it is tangentially it's Survivor.
Yeah.
So we'll figure it out. I don't know when. I'm assuming one way or another we will get to Australian Survivor at some point.
Yeah, I mean, we've been doing this since 2022 and we're barely even halfway to Winners at War. So like, I'm not worried about this well drying up anytime soon.
No, we got time. Also, here are two tweets you see a lot online. from Russell. Too bad she could lose a few more pounds, says Sandra, or talking about Sandra. And Sandra responds with, at Russell, it's sad that you mentioned me on a daily basis, yet I spend little to no time thinking about you.
Fucking savage.
Got him. And somebody else, at Russell Hance, my buddy told me they saw you in a bar bathroom smoking a dick. When are you coming out of the closet?
Jesus.
Holy shit. And Russell responding, what? You're saying something wrong with sucking a dick nowadays? Stop being such a homophobe, you hater. Suck a little dick if I like. I'll suck a little dick if I like. That's wild.
Wait, that's actually... Okay, no, I actually kind of like that response from Russell. I think that's kind of funny. Because I used to do that shit online. Like, if... Like, I was in the dregs of the toxic multiplayer Xbox Live and League of Legends shit. And so, like, homophobic, like, calling people gay and shit and all that was, like, a common thing for people to do in voice chats and text chats. And I would just go, okay. So what if I am? Like, what's your point?
It's honestly kind of wild. I saw a post on the Survivor subreddit of Russell posting, like, anti-ICE stuff. And I'm like...
Really?
He is an enigma. And I... Wow. There's something to be appreciated there, that he's not just following whatever someone is telling him to follow. He's making these decisions, right or wrong, on his own accord.
Yeah. Well, I have found, like, ICE's unpopularity has broken through in surprising places. I wasn't expecting that one. That's cool.
Yeah, here's the tweet. He was a licensed carrier that us Republicans constantly fight for. Now all of a sudden, my party is saying he shouldn't have had a gun. It was straight murder. You're blinded and delusional if you cannot see that. This has to stop.
I did see that, actually.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. I don't remember if you showed it to me or...
Oh, I might have.
If that one was just out in the wild. I mean, I don't really see... Like, I avoid and am insulated from most Survivor content, but I wouldn't be surprised if someone that I follow on Instagram is like, holy shit, even this guy?
Mm-hmm. I'll suck a little dick if I like.
You know what? Whomst among us, you know?
You know what? Anyone should suck a little dick if they like.
Yeah, why
no,
not?
No, wait, are we talking? No, I'm not going down this road. All right, no, I have to. Are we talking like, suck a little dick? Suck a big dick?
I think it really is dealer's choice. Yeah. Where I would duration, length, girth, even.
Get a little dick for the table.
God damn it,
Steven. Splurge for the table. I don't know why we're going down this road, and it's all my fault.
Yeah, you're a monster. Everyone cancel Steven.
Okay. Cancel bumper.
All right, so this episode came out on March 23rd of 2011. A couple things that happened in the week between episodes. The first one is Lawrence Taylor pleads guilty for misdemeanors of sexual misconduct and is sentenced to 6 years probation. It's Hall of Fame running back. No, sorry. Linebacker? Defensive end? Very famous NFL player, Lawrence Taylor.
Okay.
And then Elizabeth Taylor, unrelated, passes away. English-American actress Cleopatra, who's afraid of Virginia Woolf, 79 from heart failure. I don't usually put like the deaths or weddings or things like that, but that I remember that one being big news. So like, there's your sort of like, I remember where I was when that happened. Number one song is still Born This Way by Lady Gaga. The top five movies are Paul, Rango, so we're like two of the Beatles almost. Battle Los Angeles.
The third Beatle,
Battle Los Angeles. We're going to talk about number two, and then number one, Limitless. But number two, and the topic of this segment, The Lincoln Lawyer. Steven, have you heard of The Lincoln Lawyer?
I don't think I have.
Mick Holler. That's a ridiculous name.
Is that a character name?
Yeah, played by Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, no.
Is a charismatic defense attorney who does business out of his Lincoln Continental sedan. Mick spends most of his time defending petty crooks and other bottom feeders, so it comes as quite a surprise when he lands the case of a lifetime defending a Beverly Hills playboy, Ryan Philippe, who is accused of attempted murder. However, what Mick initially thinks is an open and shut case with a big monetary reward develops into something more sinister. Steven, what do you think this ran on Rotten Tomatoes?
This has the markings of something that could be good. and I'm a little afraid to rate it as good, but I'm going to do it anyway. Critic score of 79, an audience score of 82.
Holy shit, how do you do this? Your audience score is exactly on.
Yeah!
The critic score is 83.
Hell yeah. So
like 4 points off.
Hell yeah.
I thought for sure this would get you as one that was bad, because it's, I thought it was going to be bad. There's actually a whole TV show now.
Whoa.
They like adapted it into a TV show, I guess. I don't know. Years later. The consensus being, it doesn't offer any twists on the predictable courtroom thriller formula, but with a charming Matthew McConaughey leading its solid cast, The Lincoln Lawyer offers briskly enjoyable entertainment.
All right, all right, all right.
All right, all right. All right.
For the record, Lawrence Taylor, linebacker.
Linebacker, thank you. I knew he played for the Giants, but...
He did play for the Giants a long time, for yeah. like 12 years.
He's like one of the best NFL players of all time, and apparently a sex pest.
Aren't we all?
No.
Oh, okay. You're right.
Suck a little dick, consensually.
Just our presidents and tech giants. Anyway, moving Ooh. On. Allegedly. Are we...
You actually can... You can say that about the president without saying allegedly, because he was convicted in civil court.
Hmm. Hooray. Hooray? Question mark?
I don't know, man.
Oh, let's get into the episode. Episode 6, Their Redheaded Stepchild.
It doesn't feel like the most important thing this episode, but sure, okay. I do feel like the show's really trying to keep Philip important because of the entertainment factor, and I don't care anymore. I mean, I still want like some Philip, and I think like what we got is like maybe even a little bit too much for the content of the episode. It doesn't need to be literally the thing the episode's named after when it's not that important.
I think it's so funny that he describes himself as the redheaded stepchild, as the one black man that is here.
As the largest, well, no, Grant's there, as the second largest man on the tribe. And the most, like, adult, like, sounding adult.
Yeah, the elderly, bald black man is
it's
the
like
redheaded
Terry Crews,
stepchild.
You know, like an Annie wig is what yeah. I keep picturing.
It's the hard knock life.
I will say in the last
for
time
a federal
on,
agent
for the last time on I want to give Philip some credit in that he has some good dance moves.
There you go.
He does a bit where he's dancing. I was like, okay, I'll give you that. And boy, we're really in the recap. I was like, wow, they're really setting up Stephanie to be like the protagonist of the season from the last few episodes, and then she gets voted out, but she's not out of the game.
Correct.
And I feel like the show is telling me that she is going to dethrone Matt.
Okay.
Now that she, but I also thought she was going to survive this vote. Like, I spent the whole episode being like, I think it's kind of obvious where this whole episode is going, but I like the story being told. And then they.
And then they blindside you from, and keep her around.
Yeah, honestly. Because, okay. Like, even the Krista stuff kind of sets up for Stephanie to be, like, the retribution almost, because they were a pair.
It is weird how they're just, all right. Here's this huge character that we've seen so much of thus far. I mean, it feels like a lot of the big characters that we've seen a lot at this point in the season are now gone. I mean, like you said, Stephanie's not gone, but...
Yeah, Stephanie's not gone. Philip's still here. Boss and Rob's still here. But, yeah, some of the other ones. Krista was a huge part of the season. Yeah.
Anyway, they also had another excuse to show Russell. At this point, he is so far gone from the game, we don't need to see Russell.
Oh yeah, I forgot. I at this point I just blocked him out.
Yeah, there's no point. And Stephanie's all alone. Great. We start the episode with Krista and Matt cuddles.
Yeah, we get a lot of Redemption Island this episode, and it's weird because we learn a lot about like Krista and Matt and like them bonding over Jesus. But then obviously one of them's going to go home.
Correct.
And I don't hate it.
It's a fun dynamic.
Yeah.
Of, it makes oh, wonder- these two people like each other. However, they have to duke it out.
Yeah. It makes me wonder what was the intention. What, or maybe they didn't even think about it. But like when they set up Redemption Island, did they want more of this? Or, and they just didn't get it from the combinations of like Francesca and Matt and then Matt and everyone else. Or did they want it to just be like, we show the duel and then we show nothing else, but the Krista and Matt dynamic was compelling enough that they wanted to put it in.
I don't think they knew what they wanted from...
Yeah, I think you're right.
from people that get sent to Redemption Island. I think the easy thought is that they would butt heads and be like, I'm going to kill you tomorrow, but you're going to have to stay in the same shelter. Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, man, it really does just feel like they wrote down a sentence on a napkin, and then that was as full as the thought went.
Anyway, yeah, they... They have some light romantic flirting. His energy is so refreshing. He has so much more substance than the people I've been with the past 13 days. You pray a lot. Which is, I mean, it is substance. I'm going to give you that. But also...
And also, what else is there to do out there?
Yeah.
I get it. If you're religious and you're out... Like, Matt has someone with him for, like... If assuming they do the duels the day following the vote... That means that he sees somebody for, like, maybe 14 hours,
mm-hmm.
and then he's alone again for 1.5 to 2.5 days. I'm not even, like, strictly religious. Like, I'm more agnostic, and I'd be making up new gods to pray to just so I could talk to somebody.
Andrea, who? I'm falling deeply in love with this person that I am sending home tomorrow.
Matt has a type. And it is blonde.
It is blonde. Yeah, they have some, like, cute banter of, oh, I'm going to beat you tomorrow. Oh, I'm going to give you a run for your money. It's something. And you're not sneaking under the radar, Blondie. Neither are you, Blondie. They're both blonde. We get it.
It's like watching youth group teens flirt.
It's cute.
It is. And it's nice to see something redeeming from Krista. Because to be honest, everything else we've seen from her has just been, she's... bitter and mean. Like, every single time she was on camera at Zapata, she was just like being the Lil Jon to Stephanie's like diss track about her tribe.
That's where I disagree. I think we just didn't see any of her personality until she had to fight her way out of the pit of despair.
Sure.
Like, this is actually interesting to see her just under no pressure having a nice, normal conversation with a person. This is who Krista is.
They have Bible study on the beach.
It's cute. So we flip over to Zapatera, and Steve is having a little bit of a crisis that I got votes, and that was a slap in the face to me.
Why do you care? Why do you care? If you're the one that is in the Power Alliance and, like, the stragglers of the alliance you've already defeated throws votes at you, the worst thing you can do is crash out about it. This isn't Africa where the previous votes matter.
That's what I was thinking. We're long past the days of tiebreak being previous votes.
Right. That was a dumb tiebreak to begin with. Who cares?
Yeah. And he's right up asked Stephanie, like, why'd you vote for me? We can discuss this as a group if you would like. No. I want to know now. Okay.
Which I thought was actually pretty smart of Stephanie, because, like, all right, let's air your dirty laundry out, Steve. Uh-huh.
Yeah, let's go on here. And Stephanie says, you know what, I was voting for tribe strength, and you're digging deep, but
Broken containment. Jeff's digging deep is broken containment. Now the contestants are saying it of their own free will.
You might not have it to give, whatever this digging deep gives you. Basically, you're old. Sorry. You had it, but you're no longer with it. They changed what it is.
And one day that'll be us, Steven. But, like, she probably, I know that hindsight's 2020. She probably should have gone after Sarita.
Mm-hmm.
She probably should have gone after Sarita the last vote, so that narrative could have continued into this vote. But you can't go back and change it.
You're right. Again, hindsight.
Yeah.
And she talks about how she tried to be delicate, and as much as I hate sucking up to these people being dickheads, I have to do a little bit of that right now.
She's got a lot of pride.
I mean, speaking of pride, Steve is like, it's a gut check after 13 years in the NFL. Overall, I just think it's a dumb move that you voted for me. And Stephanie goes, I didn't ask for your opinion.
True.
That was a good one.
It's pretty good. And like, hey, Steve, maybe 13 years in the NFL is why your body's not keeping up very well with the rigors of Survivor.
Maybe. He's also one of the oldest contestants here.
Yeah.
it's okay if you're not the most physically fit person here.
I can understand that being difficult, though, as somebody who's made their living for so long off of being the most physically fit person.
Correct. Especially a defensive end. Like, you are physically dominating people on a daily basis, and then suddenly you're on Survivor.
Your job is basically one-on-one combat most of the time.
Yeah, that's crazy. I couldn't imagine being in the trenches like that. Playing corner, you like, I get a little bit of contact or I'm throwing a hit. That's it.
I wrestled, so. Which, I don't remember if I said this on mic. I did that. So I'm taking quarterstaff class right now, and I like wrestled with somebody at the end of class one day that like I saw was wrestling. I think I did talk about this a few episodes ago. And it was just like, oh, I used to do this for like a minute and a half periods, like three of them. Like we went for a minute maybe, and I felt bad all day.
Sidebar, I climbed this morning, and I have never been challenged in a way like this at a climbing gym before.
What do you mean?
I was on a course, and like I was up, I was struggling with it because it was pushing the level of one that I haven't done before. I think it was like a three or a four, and I am really good at the twos. Threes I can sometimes get, fours I can't get yet. And I was going up this one, and I was stuck, and I fell, and I tried again, couldn't get it a second time, and I fell. And this woman who I think worked there, instead of like offering advice, just like as soon as I fell the second time, immediately cut in and tried to do it herself. And I'm like, what is this? It's 6:30 in the morning. No one is. There's so much other space to do this.
She just wanted to show you up personally.
She did, but she didn't get it.
That's fun. That's even funnier, actually.
So then I watched and I was like, oh, I missed that foothold there. All right. I go and I do it. And I'm like, are you going to do it now? And then she walked away.
Do you think they give discounts for polycules? Because like that's got to be like 75% of their climbing base.
God damn it, Jared. The family discount?
You don't want your family to be the polycule. That not... Mm-mm. Only progressives in Alabama.
Anyway, we flip over to Ometepe, and Natalie and Ashley are shaving armpits.
Coral, just grow it out. What are you doing? With, like, dull scissors?
Couldn't be me.
This actually probably is how Russell got that horrible armpit.
Correct.
Rash. Like, why are you trying to groom yourself with gross, dull scissors?
I am full, like, if you have it to the point that it's like you can grab it and pull it out and snip it, fine. If you are
even then, why? It's gonna be itchy.
Yeah,
just be a little hairy.
If
what
you're
does
like
it matter?
If you're getting down to the skin level, no thank you, don't do that. That's setting you up for failure.
No.
Yeah, I just, one, I'm impressed that they even showed that on camera. It's I don't like it.
They wanted to show the hot women in swimsuits, like, touching each other and pull and, like, doing beauty standard stuff. Like,
basically, the thing that they're setting up is they're over there working and we're here shaving.
Yeah, and Ashley says, like, it's not like we're lazy, and then goes on to describe them being lazy.
We just don't want to do things or work or anything to make us survive as a camp.
Sometimes I wish, like, the people that are doing that, I guess it does happen every so often, but, like, would just own up to it and just go, yeah, I'm being lazy. I don't care. Like, I'm not in danger right now. I have the protection of my alliance, and I don't want to work.
We've had people do that on Survivor before.
Every so often, but it, just own up to it.
We talk about French braiding, and I think Andrea was, like, in there for a little bit, like, French braid me. Great. Grant, do my dreads. And Rob goes, I'll take that scissors and I'll fix them for you. I'll snip them off in the middle of the night.
Honestly,
how's
like
that?
Woke Boston Rob? Even he doesn't like white guy with dreads?
Is it? Hold on. I think this is a parabolic arc. You can be like so Republican or in the middle, you're like, oh, whatever. I don't care. Let him do what he wants. And then so liberal that both sides are like, get rid of them dreads.
Yeah, on the right, it's like dirty hippie. And on the left is appropriation. And both paths lead you to cut off the dreads.
Brilliant. Philip takes this moment. Girls, I have a request. every half hour or so, can you check on the fire? If I go before... Oh, yeah. He's just basically like...
He has a whole confession about, like, if I go before them, talking about Natalie and Ashley...
Something's horribly wrong.
Something's horribly wrong with the game. He says with like, the game structure, basically. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, Philip, that's the evolution of the game. If this was season five, like... Yeah, sure. That, like, people's, like, work, and it still matters to a certain extent, but, like, the fact that you are the most useful person in camp and still at danger of going home is evolution of the game, and Boston Rob tells us that later, mm-hmm. where he says, like, I don't want those girls to be doing anything. I want everyone to fucking hate them.
Mm-hmm.
Gee, like, yeah, great.
It's so easy to get caught up in the day-to-day life of all of this to lose sight of the forest through the trees.
Yeah.
He gets so mad at these ladies for not working, and he confronts them. He's like, they don't give me real credit for anything. Like someone petting a dog that don't like dogs. Like, you want to be pet, Philip? You want a little pat on the head? You okay?
I'm
the redheaded stepchild.
Philip has gotten, like, almost more normal this episode in some ways. I don't know. People on the subreddit were talking about, like, that they think Philip is like, there's a shtick there, like how Coach was playing a character.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I said that I don't think that.
I truly don't think that Philip is playing a character.
Part of me thinks maybe he was playing it up a little bit, and maybe this is more of his normal in, like, episode six. But either way, if Philip was playing a character or not, that is what he thought a cool guy looked like. And that is maybe even more interesting in that, like, in his mind, he thinks Stealth Force 5 is what will make him look cool.
Stealth or us.
Whatever.
Some of my favorite contestants on Survivor are those weirdos that come in too hot and they're like, oh, I gotta be normal, or I gotta tone it down a little bit. And just have this realization. There's one on 50 that I'm really excited about seeing a second chance. Because, boy, came in real hot.
Well, like, I think that's kind of what happens with... The first few days are probably the hardest, mm-hmm. in terms of, like, adjusting.
Yeah.
You're starving, but not starved yet. So that's not your new normal. And you don't know anybody. And... several contestants suffering from nicotine withdrawals for reasons outside of my comprehension. So, like, I do get it to some extent, but, like, the fact that this is who Philip's playing character, that this is who he thinks is compelling, that is actually even more funny to me.
We flip over to Redemption Island for a little bit. Krista gets her Bible. That is her personal item, and Matt and Krista have a nice little prayer before they get into their duel. Matt, she's different. She's not like other girls.
God damn it.
We've both been struggling and not having a belief community, and I have anxiety that this could be my last day.
I get it. I don't want to just religion bash. Actually, Will Wood put out a new album that's just like a live album of some of the stuff that he's put out before, my favorite artist. But in there, he weaves together this long story where he has, like, bits where he's just, like, telling a story and then goes into a song.
Mm-hmm.
And in one of that, he's talking about, like, it is weird to be... Because he's, like, making fun of some of Branson, Missouri, which is, like, a very religious town. And he's like, it is weird that, like, that's the one group of people you get to make fun of and maybe get, like, one angry email afterwards. He's like, I'm not going to die on that hill, but the hill's there. And...
Isn't that the town with the like, people that hold the signs outside of... like everything?
It's the Christian Las Vegas. I don't know about that, but it's the Christian Las Vegas. And so anyway, just all that to say, I don't want to be that guy, but there is just some level of, like, y'all have been out here for what, 12 to 15 days, and you're struggling with not having your, like, people to talk about your faith with for 12 to 15 days. I guess a little longer when you think about, like, pre-production. But, like, so maybe 3 weeks. Like, I love my friends. I love my theater. I love, all, like, a lot of things in my life. I can go 3 weeks and be fine with just, like, you know, my support structure. It's crazy that it's that fragile, I guess.
Yeah, and I don't know about fragile, but, like, you're so used to having this... like support, and whenever anything is challenging you, you go to this religious, like this group of people who can be like, ah, yes, this is why. I don't know. I agree in that I personally am like, yeah, whatever, a month, I'll be fine. I'll survive. I don't need cake for a month. I don't need, but
I guess it's also important to point out that Matt's pretty young. So
he is young.
That doesn't help.
He is young, but again, to each their own. I think we all have needs, and in his Maslow hierarchy of needs, that is up higher than I would put it.
No, I think that's lower than you'd put it, as in, because that's what
you're right.
He needs more.
It's
often
more of a foundation.
Yeah.
That is how the pyramid works.
Yeah. I'm not even bashing for it. It's just something that when I hear that kind of talk from people that are like really devout believers of any religion, I'm like, it's just so foreign to me. Mm. Even I used to be like very Christian, but even then it'd be like, okay, I don't need to go to church for a couple weeks. That's fine. Anyway, maybe that's why I'm here now.
Right. Here we are.
That's it.
Okay. I'm going to move past this. And then they go to their duel. Andrea, Natalie, and Julie and Mike are the watchers.
Don't even bother showing the picking anymore.
No.
We've gone.
It's not important.
Yeah. We've gone from it being this whole big deal of drawing rocks to like, nah, they're just here.
The two of them have to use grappling hooks to retrieve three bags while standing on a platform, and then use a ball from the bags that they retrieved to solve a table maze.
All of these challenges are totally like fine in terms of like one-on-one challenges for balance. There's good drama in them. But I don't know. There's just still like, okay, like while I'm watching, I'm like, oh, this is really tense and dramatic. And then it's over and I'm like, but I don't care now because Matt's just still here. He's just, no matter who it is, they're just still in Redemption Island. It doesn't, okay, we just go back and we're going to do it again next episode.
Mm-hmm. Weirdly, Krista gets out to an early lead and like a pretty sizable lead and couldn't hold on because I think she attacked the table maze too cautiously.
Mm.
She was just so slow with that maze that Matt just basically caught up. And
then she panicked and fucked up.
Yeah. So Krista loses, Matt wins again.
And like for the show, like this is the best case scenario, right? Is that one person that's at least fairly likable in mm-hmm. Matt has gone on a run and seems like he might come back into the game. Although I think Stephanie will probably beat him next episode because she's been getting too much screen time to just be unceremoniously shuffled out, I think.
Okay.
Regardless, like in these tense, very close, he's come from behind multiple times. You've had Russell Hance crying because he got defeated, like all the stuff that on paper would make it the most interesting version, and it still sucks.
For the record, I'm pretty sure you've said that Matt is going to lose every single time here, except for the first time when you're like, they're setting him up to lose this time.
I think I've said that there's no way he makes it to the like all the way through to the merge, because I think that's when they're going to bring somebody back. I don't remember. I think I thought he was going to beat Krista, but yeah, I guess I thought he was going to lose against Russell too. Yeah.
And so Matt wins. Krista gives Matt her Bible. It was a really nice gesture.
Yeah,
I really like this. What I didn't like is they used the tribal council music here.
I actually did like that. And I think I think they should have done that for all of them. Because it's still not quite like it. I think the music made it feel more final. Whereas like it's been missing that finality for everyone else who's left.
You're right. But I wish they would use like create a piece that is just this finality for this moment. Because I associate a certain beat of the of snuffing the torch.
You are more musically minded than I am.
When it's not there and she's just tossing it into the fire, I'm like, oh, it doesn't hit the same.
Really?
Yeah.
I agree that it doesn't hit the same because nothing does because the setup is bad.
Sure.
But the music at least gave it some pomp and circumstance and made it go, oh, yes, this is like, this is the equivalent of getting your torch snuffed, at least in purpose, if not in like where it is in the episode form, any of the things that make it good. So I think we're just in disagree here. I wish they would have done it. It is weird that they did it for this one specifically, because you could say like, oh, they learned as they went, but the whole season is edited before they air the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
You could go back and add that once you get, if you get to editing episode 6 and you go, oh, we should put music under that. You can go back and add it to the 5 episodes before.
Jared, what's your favorite anime outro song?
Oh, that's a good question. The one that jumps up front of mind is Walk Like an Egyptian from JoJo Part 3. But that's because I watched it yesterday.
Sure. Imagine just like halfway through an episode, they break out Walk Like an Egyptian and then just keep on moving like nothing even happened.
Dude, no, that shit slaps when you use the anime intro or outro in the middle of an episode for like the lead up to a fight. Oh, or you put in, it's been an instrumental theme and then you put it in a climactic point of the episode and you add the words in. Oh my God.
We disagree. All right. Anyway, Andrea takes a moment to be a little spurned here that, oh, I thought we had a thing, but he clearly had more of a thing with this person that he met for one day.
This is such like a youth group love or crush triangle.
I do like that. It seems like it twists her head around in this, okay, we're playing the game now.
I don't even think it didn't feel game related to me. I know she said that. It just felt like jealousy. And also like, oh, this person he knew for one day. Girl, he knew you for 3. 3 to 5.
I love him. Yeah, so she's like, ooh, maybe it would be better if he doesn't come back into this game. Because I don't know if I can trust him the way that I did before.
It's not like Krista's going to be on the jury.
No.
Like, this was just a moment of human connection.
Yeah. I had a good bond with him, but he clearly bonded with her as well. Could be dangerous coming back in this game.
Ah, yes, for all the good Krista's friendship will do him.
We flip over to Zapatera, and Sarita's tooth hurts.
Yeah.
Apparently she was doing the thing where you scrape your teeth and to try to clean them and like got in the gums and it got infected.
Well, I'm confused because we hear a couple different versions of this. So in Sarita's mind, or in Sarita's telling, in which I think is probably slightly hypochondriac, speaking as somebody who is a little bit of a hypochondriac, she says like, I was scraping at it and I got like bacteria in there. And I think Stephanie or somebody makes fun of her behind her back of like, how would you know that you got bacteria in there? You are not a dentist. You cannot see your own mouth. Yes. And then Ralph says that she cut her gum. He's like, she took a stick and like cut her gum. And like, I don't think Ralph's a reliable narrator. So I don't really know what happened. If it hurt, like, if she didn't cut her gum and it hurts, then it already is infected and you're fucked. You are going to get medevaced if you don't get voted out. In a matter of time. I don't think you make it another, you know, 25 days or whatever with an infected tooth. If it's you cut your gum, you might be fine.
Infected tooth, yes. Infected gums, eh. I feel like, I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I shouldn't weigh in on this.
Well, I guess I guess they can give them antibiotics. Mm-hmm. So actually, never mind. I forgot that like they can still give them medicine. Just give them fucking toothbrushes. Why are we not giving them toothbrushes still?
I actually don't think they ever do.
Why? We're just letting people's teeth get fucked up?
You're not eating like candy on a daily basis, or you're eating like nothing.
Well, I guess that's true.
So I don't know. It's different schools of thought on this. I wouldn't care if they got a toothbrush, let's put it that way. It does not change the game.
No.
And everyone kind of piles on that she's a drama queen and that she's just so much. And David takes a little moment to be like, hey, Stephanie, you need to find a way to unseat one of these other people. I think I want you around, so let's try to figure out a way to keep you. Sarita is that person. You need to find a way to have people dogpile on Sarita.
Yeah, David is having a proxy war with Sarita, and Stephanie is his army.
If I'm stuck with this 5, I'll shoot myself, says David.
Okay.
I'm not drama.
I mean, he's dramatic as fuck.
Talk to everyone, but don't push too hard here. Like, just go do work.
I actually think the both of them play this really, really well.
They do, and it's unfortunate that it doesn't work, because
sometimes you can play, especially in, like, the episode that you get voted out, sometimes you can play every single move left correctly and it's just not enough.
It's just, you get hyper chest.
God damn it.
I will have every reason to bring back hyper chess.
I'll play it right now.
Hell yeah. Sorry, we're going to
stop this episode right now.
No, I got to finish this. And Stephanie goes, oh, I have to suck up to people I hate. Why didn't I learn how to do this in school? I just think that's funny. Over at Ometepe, Philip says rain is coming, and he continues his frustration with Natalie and Ashley. They're getting the fruits of my labor, and I'm getting no credit. I don't like this.
This is not an office. This is Survivor. That's the best place for you to, well, not the best place to be for you to be in, but like, you don't necessarily need their credit at this exact moment. You just need to be useful enough that it is inconvenient for them to vote you out.
Philip is, or not Philip, Rob is jumping this line here back and forth, being like, God, this guy, they're 19 and 20 year old girls. What does he expect them to do? Philip, you gotta calm down. Like, we're playing the long game here. Who cares?
Yeah, they're not gonna help.
But then, like, dogpiling Philip when he's not there.
Well, I think Boston Rob might be trying to take him to the end of the game.
Really?
I am starting to wonder if Boston Rob's like, man, I can win final tribal sitting next to that guy.
I put this man right here, and I'm golden.
But I think that could backfire on him, honestly.
Really?
Especially if it's a final three.
Mm.
Because then Philip's going to be up there, and everyone's going to be so mad that, like, that guy doesn't deserve to be up there. Fuck that, and fuck you, Boston Rob, for bringing him. I'm going to vote for contestant number three.
Mm. Yeah, Ashley kind of gets real defensive. Not defensive, gets up in Philip's face. It's like, you talk to them men in a different way than you do to us, the ladies.
And she's right.
And she is correct.
Both of them are right, and both of them are wrong. Like, she's right, his tone sucks. He's right that they should probably be doing more around camp. And then she's wrong that they are not lazy, and he's wrong that he is respectful.
This is classic. These people are stuck next to each other. This is like college for a theater department. You're like, oh, you've been doing shows together for 4 years and you hate each other at this point, but you have to pretend that you like each other.
Mm-hmm.
Good times.
Yep. Oh, don't get me started. Get a couple beers in me. I'll tell you some stories.
Oh, boy. And yeah, Philip's like, hey, tomorrow I'm not doing fire. You can get off your butts and help out here.
Throwing temper tantrums, always a good strategy on Survivor.
But then he gets like weirdly like, Ashley says, don't follow me. And he gets, I'll follow you. I'll follow you if I want. I'm like, ooh, I don't like that.
Yeah.
There's a physical dynamic there that makes me uncomfortable.
Well, yeah. And
I'm not even there.
Right. Yeah. You, as someone who is like a bigger man, and I'm not as big as Philip, you have to be aware of the threat.
Mm-hmm.
The threat you are just by being in that body.
Correct.
Yeah.
Don't chase after women when they're walking away from you on purpose.
It's a bad look.
It's a bad look. You're not my dad, Philip. Walk away.
Yeah, this whole thing is a mess. And Boston Rob and Grant are like, let them fight.
No, he says, I have to squash this, says Boston Rob.
Oh, right, because they do still need to win challenges. Yeah. That's right.
Philip was right. Like, the girls aren't doing anything. But, yeah. He says, I had to play Arafat. I don't know what this is. I should have looked it up. Arafat and the peace process.
Oh, God, it's on the tip of my tongue.
Is this a biblical reference?
Look it up.
Okay. Holy shit. Okay. Boston Rob getting more deeper than I expected. I think he's referencing the Oslo Accords.
Okay.
Where Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin and Palestinian Liberation Organizer Chairman Yasser Arafat shook hands on the White House lawn.
That's okay. That's why I knew that name. When was that?
1993.
Okay. Yeah.
Not something I would expect Boston Rob to reference.
Hey, fuck you. I read books and shit.
No, he's intelligent, but I'm like, Why that?
No, that's not... He's not exactly like a philosopher most of the time. Like, he's super intelligent.
Yeah.
But you don't expect him to pull out, like, obscure history references from the 90s. I mean, I'm sure it was a big deal in 93, but, like, you don't expect him to pull out, like, historical things from at that point 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Boston Rob had time since his first season. I'm gonna go be just the smartest man in the world.
I have $1 million. I'll get a master's degree. Fuck it.
Yeah, and the less they do, the better. Like we said, he wants them to be unlikable. Great. And then makes a joke at Philip's expense to them. Like, basically playing both sides here.
Yes, but playing... In a way that's really smart, because he's playing up the things that the other side doesn't like about the other side. And he's Boston Rob, who's kind of like, will punch at anybody, so he gets away with it. Mm-hmm. Not everybody can get away with that.
Right. Stephanie apologizes to Steve here, and basically, hat in hand, walks up to Steve. Hey, I hate apologizing, but I am sorry for voting for you. I know it hurt your feelings, but... That's not what I meant. I was in a bad spot and I needed some way out. And Steve actually, he considers this pretty well. He's like, I'm not sure if she's trying to play the game better or if she's being genuine here, but it was nice.
I think he ends up at, like, still not being sure, but leaning towards genuine, which mm-hmm. I was like, damn, Stephanie, that's pretty good.
That's pretty good. And she basically is like, honest truth, I wanted to write Sarita's name down, but I wasn't in a position to do so. And Steve's like, you know what? You're stronger all the way around than Sarita is. So I don't know. I'd love to go into a challenge and pick up her slack. I need to drag her down. Bring me up, says Stephanie to us.
And then they, and I know the show isn't in control of this or should not be in control of this. The challenge is not one that highlights Stephanie at all.
No.
That's tough.
Speaking of, the immunity challenge.
Before we get to that real quick, mm-hmm. I was going to say, there's a lot of, like, a lot I like in these first six episodes of, like, interpersonal relationships. Like, I feel like I know a lot about, even if some people are like, you know, I don't know shit about Natalie. Like, Ashley's kind of the mouthpiece for the two of them. But I feel like I kind of have a good vibe on, like, what a lot of people's deals are.
What's your deal?
Which I didn't feel that way as much in Nicaragua. I didn't feel that way at all in Samoa. So it's... We didn't hear Heroes vs. Villains. That's different. It's all returning cast, so it's not quite the same. It's refreshing. I genuinely really like it.
Potentially on accident, they are humanizing these people.
Yes! It's awesome!
It's great. I love that.
That shoe's just sitting up there, though. I don't remember who it was. I think it was Carl in the subreddit about, like, oh, I wish Jared didn't know that people's opinions this season were bad. And it was like, yeah, I mean, that does color it a little bit, I guess. But, like, the shoe hanging is Redemption Island, because it either has to be something or not. And it's just kind of there until it, and, like, it's either going to fuck up the entire game or the person's going to come back and immediately get voted out.
But Jared, I have this elaborate Rube Goldberg for the shoe to drop. Isn't it kind of... what? Enjoy the ride while we get to the shoe dropping.
It's not a good Rube Goldberg machine.
Come on. All right. Immunity challenge?
Yes.
Great. We walk in. Jeff's like, there's animosity between these two tribes. And Mike goes, yes. Both tribes desperately want to win, so that's where that comes from. Philip, today I'm using both animals.
Okay. Okay, Coach Light.
Jeff goes, both? Both.
He loves riling up Philip.
It's so funny. Steve says he's going to give him the forearm. Give him one of these.
I just had a thought, and I know I've had a lot of random thoughts this episode. I'm sorry it's going so long. if you're a first-time player, but if you're Boston Rob, who's very media savvy, do you think part of the reason he's like, I want to keep Philip in the game is because it helps him personally outside of Survivor? Like, the better the season, the more of a weird guy Philip is, the more camera footage there is of Ometepe, and the more Boston Rob's personal fame stock goes up.
That is some 4D chess that I maybe he's thinking about. If anyone's going to, I'd put it in his court.
Like, as far as, I think Boston Rob's the closest we've ever gotten to a player producer in terms of, like, he's played the most amount of times or up there,
mm-hmm.
and has, like, the most amount of fame from being on the show.
I mean, basically, if he didn't have the heavy Boston accent, he would probably be a shoo-in to host the show when Jeff steps down.
Sure, he still could be.
I mean, that's true. Like, my God, this is his third time. They love fourth. Him. This is his fourth time?
Marquesas, All-Stars, Heroes versus Villains, Redemption Island.
You're right. This is his fourth time.
He's been on roughly 1 in 5 Survivor seasons at this point.
That's bananas. More than anyone at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. By far.
So I was thinking about that with when he saw Andrea and Matt and was like, I don't know. I know what a showmance can be. This is the Boston Rob story, not the Andrea story.
So yeah, basically they're playing a game we've seen before in a slightly different context. Two members of the tribes are launching balls into the air, and people at the beach are sprinting from flags to try to catch them in essentially lacrosse sticks with butterfly nets attached.
I like this challenge in a vacuum. Maybe it was unfair to have it with a professional NFL wide receiver.
They game the system a little bit on this one.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to skip to that is.
Considering the first 3 episodes, I was screaming at anyone who would listen how unbalanced these tribes were, and now they'll be at even numbers, like mission accomplished, I guess.
Grant, essentially, he was in the front, and he treats this game like his own personal jugs machine, where they shoot it low and flat, where he will sprint forward from his front flag and try not to get caught by, I think, who was playing defense on him?
Mike.
Who is trying his best, but is not fast enough to catch up with
him. No, because he's a professional NFL wide receiver.
Correct.
He runs routes for a living.
It got to the point that Mike is ripping his shirt off to try to prevent him from getting away from him.
And credit to, I don't remember who was actually like flinging the balls for Ometepe, but putting it where only Grant could get it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's also, you know, there is the danger that Mike could intercept one, but being a good quarterback, whoever that was, I think Andrea and probably Ashley or Natalie, I don't know, maybe not. Who's to say? They put it so that there's no world in which Mike, like if Grant doesn't get it, it's just going to hit the ground.
Exactly. It's him or nothing. Like the perfect flag route.
Yeah.
Quarterback. Sports.
But yeah, there's not much else to talk about with this. It's just Mike ripping off Grant's shirt while Grant dunks on him like 5 times in a row.
Yeah. And even Boston Rob gets a steal in there. So
yeah, Grant flies over Ralph.
Grant gets 4 points and Boston Rob gets 1.
Yeah.
And it is not close. Ometepe wins 5-0. Hooray.
And they try to work this into the narrative of like, oh, well, since you threw that challenge, you've lost 3 of 4. Okay. There's no fucking world in which, I don't care if they had won every single challenge up until this point. They could have put their entire team on Grant and it wouldn't have mattered.
It's a good strategy.
Just wrap around his legs.
Yeah, I mean, just hold on a little bit. So Ometepe wins. They get to go have a beautiful picnic in overlooking San Juan del Sur, and yeah, fascinating. Also funny that there is a Survivor season called Survivor San Juan del Sur.
Wait, is there really?
Yeah.
Like American Survivor season?
Correct.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah. I believe it's Blood versus Water 2.
Oh, okay. It's not called that. It's just in that location.
No, no, no. It's called San Juan del Sur.
Then why?
Because they don't want to call it Blood versus Water 2.
Oh, okay. Got it. Heard.
Yes. Anyway, we get to watch them have a beautiful lunch. There's fish, there's lobster, there's guac, juice, salads. It's gorgeous. Overlooking what looks like a city.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird.
It is kind of weird.
It's like, okay, you're in Survivor, but there are people right there.
Usually it's like remote getaways, partially so that things don't leak out.
Mm-hmm. We're trying really hard not to actually acknowledge that there is civilization right there.
Yeah.
But you're in a nice plaza eating food.
It felt Amazing Race.
It did. It really did.
Hmm.
And so they hang out. They're eating their food. Rob sees the clue underneath the lobster. He's like, I'm going to let somebody else have it this time.
Well, yeah, because you don't need it.
He doesn't. And there is no idol, so he...
I know you're just having fun, like, lapping the field, Boston Rob, but don't take unnecessary risks.
And Grant sees it, and I don't know if this is the best case or the worst case scenario. Probably the best case.
Yeah.
He sees it, he steals it, he gets clocked by Philip, so again, could be best case, could be worst case.
Well, I don't think he gets clocked by Philip. Like, Philip doesn't see him grab it. They then go off to look at it, the two of them. Like, Boston Rob immediately gets up and is like, let's check out the view. And this is so unnecessary. Boston Rob tells us, not even the other contestants, tells us that it's in case it's hidden there at reward.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe he says that to Grant or something, because why would he say that to us?
He does say that to Grant.
To Grant. Why? That's a stupid idea. There's no way it's hidden at a reward challenge? Or at a reward, That's the end of the sentence.
Yeah, part of me thinks he got a little anxious and went, what if it's not the idol? What if it's something else? Like, he just has to know the information.
Yeah.
He can't help himself.
But it's so suspicious. If after, right now, the only person who knows that you even have the clues, at least that we know of, is Grant.
Mm-hmm.
But if after every single reward that you win, you go off with Grant alone, people are going to start figuring it out.
Is it, though, more suspicious that he doesn't really care about the clue?
What do you mean?
Like, if he just kind of sees Grant take it and then lets him go, is that then more suspicious? Like, giving him the wide berth?
No, just be like, just take interest in it when you're back at camp.
Sure. Or at least acknowledge that he has it.
Yeah.
Show interest.
He'll look and be like, okay.
Yeah. I want to know more about that later. Philip comes up on them and he's like, I saw that. Mm-mm. You share it with me. Tell me the thing.
God damn it.
Like, I've been in an alliance with Robin Grant. We call it Stealth R Us.
No, you do. You do now.
I'm the specialist, Rob's the mentalist, and Grant's the assassin.
What does that mean?
I don't know, but that's what they are.
I specialist and what do you call it, Rob?
The mentalist.
Okay, this is like the strategist and like you're a cop, you're a fed, so like sure, or allegedly, I don't fucking know. But what does the assassin do? What?
He killed a guy.
I guess like the challenge guy? I don't know. Why am I trying to break this down? Philip doesn't know. He said it because it sounds cool to him.
Is my client a perfect man? No, I killed him. She fucked up. I fucked up. And he caps it with, hell hath no fury like a lion or a gorilla. His tattoos. When he thinks he's been provoked.
Yeah, because he has this whole confession about how, like, I'll play it cool, but I'm going to go after them now. Which we've heard, like, four times. Mm-hmm. One of which was only in a last time on that never happened in the episode. So... sure, Philip, whatever.
But he's all about integrity. He served 4 years for duty, honor, and country.
He listed the number of days.
He did. I didn't write it down.
Fucking freak.
Me and the U.S. have something for you if you try that with me. I'm gonna smile, and when the time comes, I'm gonna kick a little ass around here.
This shit feels so much worse in the year of our Lord 2026. Like, at the time, it was the hyper-patriotism was cringe, and, like, this is the era of, like, America, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, it was cringy then. In the world of United States cities being occupied by rogue federal agents, boy, does this feel so much worse.
Have you seen any clips from the fake halftime show?
Yeah. It's weird. It's Bo Burnham's pandering song.
It's Bo Burnham's song. It's really good.
The thing about that song, I'm stealing a bit from Jon Stewart here, but like everything in that song, besides just like hating the concept of trans people somewhere, are perfectly obtainable goals.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, I want to drink my beer, rob my truck. And it's like, you can do all of that. Congratulations.
Yeah, no one is actually stopping you from doing that. You're trying to stop someone else from just being alive.
The concept of trans people existing does not stop you from drinking your beer and catching fish. Anyway.
That is a scarecrow. I'm throwing references upon references in here. Go listen to the... If you thought that the fake halftime show was funny, then go watch Bo Burnham's country song.
Yeah, it's called Pandarin by Bo Burnham. It's from his second special on Netflix.
Yeah.
Anyway.
He has sex with the scarecrow. Anyway. Zapatera is... David's lobbying hard for Sarita to go, and we just got our ass kicked. I just need her to go. And Sarita says, I think David and Stephanie might be campaigning against me, but I'm going to sit here and I'm going to do nothing.
I can't believe she pulls the Brenda and it works.
Because I am the most loyal player they've ever seen.
If this challenge had been closer... And not like, and Stephanie could have actually like contributed. She was behind the slingshot. If she could have contributed more.
If this was a more physical challenge, which is weird because I think the challenge is set up for it to be physical.
If it wasn't a challenge won by a single freak of like athleticism, then I think Stephanie stays. But I think that everyone's sitting there, like, they don't say it, but when they're around the circle, when they're like, we got our butts kicked, like, I could tell everyone is trying to find the way to say, he's an NFL wide receiver. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. They all just wanted to scream that, but, like, couldn't for some reason.
Did you hear that it, the like, cut-in Jeff overdub of, it's the NFL wide receiver versus the ex-Marine or whatever?
Oh, yeah.
Very obviously overdubbed later, because he can't say that shit on the island.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. I didn't think of it as an overdub. I wasn't paying that much attention to that. It wasn't showing Jeff when he said it. It was showing right. them, which, like, that's actually a big tell.
Correct.
Yeah.
And it didn't fit. So it was about as obvious as you can be.
Sure.
Yeah, she doesn't want to do anything. Meanwhile, Stephanie tries to go and pitch to everyone. She pitches to Julie, and Sarita walks up on it, and it's real awkward.
Yeah, but, like, she's...
But, she's like winning these arguments,
yeah.
But it doesn't work out in her favor.
I know it sucks, but it makes me think that, like, if Stephanie doesn't win next episode, like if she doesn't win Redemption Island next episode, I think she's probably coming back for a future season.
Interesting.
I like she has it.
She's got it. What that it is, I'm not sure, but she's got it.
Chutzpah. Kind of, actually. That I think Jeff says in Tribal, like, is her spunk something that, like, can be useful to the tribe?
Oh, my.
But also, like, she did just say she was going to flip on the whole tribe.
She did get it
on a certain level.
Basically, David's like, I'm so sick of losing. They get everyone together from this group of five. It's like, I don't want to lose anymore. That is my number one priority.
No, it's not. It's getting rid of Sarita. I mean, it is also that, but, like, David knows if he loses or suspects if he loses this fight, he's probably next.
Mm.
Like, this fight is about Stephanie or Sarita, but it's also about Sarita or David.
Sure.
And the tribe chooses Sarita. Now, maybe they'll go back on that and choose, they'll change their minds and choose David if they lose another challenge, but I think he also feels his back up against the wall a little bit.
Ew, David.
Shut up.
Anything else before Tribal?
No.
All right. David comes out a swinging for Stephanie.
You can tell he's a lawyer.
Uh-huh.
Because he is just making a case.
Yeah. We're paying the price for taking her foot off the gas. And later he says something along the lines of, wow, Steve, those two positives really sounded like negatives,
it
huh?
It was really smart because Jeff asks... Steve or Steve maybe just goes off on his own, like weighing the pros and cons, or really just pros of Stephanie and Sarita. And for Stephanie, he lists a couple pros, and then he lists one pro for Sarita, and that she's loyal. And then it's like, yeah, but she's not very good at the challenges and not this. And Dave's like, wow, like You listed one positive and mostly negatives when the question was about positives.
You sound like you're making the case for Stephanie here.
I feel like Dave's probably a really good lawyer.
I feel like he is.
But yeah, Stephanie kind of dog walks Sarita too. I do wonder if she was too aggressive.
Potentially.
Like if it reminded
She was combative.
Everyone. Yeah, like, oh yeah, she's dangerous.
But,
I don't know.
Like, I get it. Sarita's argument for I didn't want to be the person who volunteers and couldn't follow through, and Jeff's like, so you're saying you're glad you didn't participate because then you couldn't be the goat, and he's like, well, no, that's not true. And David's like, that's exactly what she's saying.
She doesn't if I can cross-examine the witness.
Your Honor, I object. It's overall, it's probably the most interesting tribal council we've had this far this season.
I would disagree, French Rescue.
Oh yeah, I forgot that was the first one.
Yeah, but besides that, yes.
Francesqua.
Stephanie's good at a tribal council. I mean, she's good for TV at a tribal council. Mm-hmm. I think she's probably too aggressive for the game at tribal council.
Yeah. So they vote, and Stephanie has gone on a 4-2 line.
Sarita's vote is really, really confident. Like, when she votes, her voting confessional is like, you know, if you had done this, you would have stuck around. I was like, wow, you are cocky that it is going to be you staying.
She must have been assured by every single person that...
Like, except for David.
Except for David, yes. David, in the opposite, goes, man, I hope this worked, because I think you need to go.
He might have known it was... which way it was going to, which is why, because he said something like, I made the best case I could. So maybe it was a thing of like, okay, that was my last ditch. But like, I don't know. They didn't seem with me when we left the beach.
Which I know is not how Survivor works, especially at this point. Like, you don't change people's mind at Tribal Council.
Sure.
At least not in this way.
Yeah. Ralph doesn't know how to spell Stephanie. At least I assume it was Ralph. I'm making an assumption there.
You're probably right.
It feels right. Even if it's not, he spelled it with an I, like early in it. He spelled it like Stefani. It's really, really bad.
I feel like he has spelled more names incorrectly than correctly thus far this season.
Oh, 100%. That one just really stuck out at me.
So I forgot to do Krista. How do you think Krista does in Future Survivor?
Yeah. Honestly, I think she's a little too combative. I mean, we didn't see a ton of her. But, like, we have seen her and Stephanie, like, moved as a unit until Krista was voted off. We only saw Krista have, like, negatives. Like, we didn't see a moment of her, like, being kind to anyone outside of Matt at Redemption Island. And was just, like, there's almost, like, bounciness or, like, Stephanie's fighting, but it's, like... It's like high energy spunk, like Jeff called it. And Krista's kind of like depressive meanness. And one of those can work because there's energy behind it. And you kind of like work with that. The other one is impossible to work with. Mm. And so I just don't see Krista being an effective navigator of the social dynamics of the game. Especially when her first reaction is, I hate everyone. Yeah.
Well, she does not come back. This is the end for Krista.
Okay.
There's honestly not a ton out there. She got married, and I think she went through... she fought breast cancer at one point. This was like 2 years ago. But I... Honestly, it seems like there's not a ton out there about her.
She just disappeared after the show. That's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
No quarantine questionnaire.
No quarantine questionnaire, no nothing. I hope that her chemo went well.
Yeah, fuck cancer.
Yeah. I mean, as depressing as it is, I don't see any follow-up to that, so I'm assuming it went well.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Your protagonist of the episode.
I mean, it's got to be Stephanie, right? I guess you could make an argument for Dave, maybe. But I think it's Stephanie. I guess you could also make an argument for Boston Rob. But they're not the ones that go to tribal, so I'll leave it as Stephanie's.
I'll allow it.
Thanks, Stephen.
Anything else you'd like to say before we end this episode?
I guess put yourself in the shoes of of Zapata.
It's a lot of shoes.
Personalities aside, do you think you would have wanted to vote out Sarita, who very likely is going to lose and go home, and keep Stephanie, who might be with you or might turn against you? Or would you rather vote out Stephanie, knowing that Sarita will be with you, but if Stephanie survives Redemption Island, she is going to be against you?
I guess it depends on what you value. If this is funny, because I actually had this question to ask you, so
that's hilarious.
I'm going to answer it the way that I think is correct. You keep the loyalty. You keep the person who you think will work with you. And if it doesn't work out, you have a nice little easy cutoff of someone that you're like, yeah, this is clearly the weak link.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm thinking like post-merge. You don't get to choose who's the cutoff post-merge.
You're right, but you don't know when that merge is coming.
Yeah.
And you want loyalty going into merge. True. You don't want someone who you're iffy about getting through and then immediately cutting ties with you and throwing your game way out the window.
You better fucking hope that Matt beats Stephanie if you're in that case.
You better.
But I guess at that point, maybe Matt goes back to Ometepe as well.
Your thought? What do you value, Jared?
If I thought I could work with Stephanie one-to-one, I would keep Stephanie.
Okay.
If we're going purely on like tribal numbers, I think, yeah, you I'm a gambling man.
Ooh.
I would rather take, because like I would feel like, okay, Sarita is not coming back. I would rather take the risky one, control the risk, keep the risk in front of me, be like, look, we earned your trust. We brought you in, versus the coin flip of does she win? Because also like we're down, we started with 18, right?
Yes. Two tribes of nine.
So we're down to 13 contestants after this, not including Redemption Island. So we're probably only like 1 to 3 votes away from the merge. She doesn't have to win that many to come back.
Mm-hmm.
If we suspect they're coming back at the merge, and if I'm in the game at this point, I would suspect they're coming back at the merge. So yeah.
I'm excited, Jared.
I don't like that.
All right, let's shut this down. Bumper. That'll do it for this episode of the Survivor Turning Back Time podcast. Jared, anything you'd like to promote?
Crash out. Go insane. Just like, as a treat, a little bit, like as a treat. Just listen, the world's been weird the last few months. Like, and I don't mean in like, sorry, let me be very clear. Not in like destructive or self-destructive or harmful ways, but like, I don't know, go scream in a field or something. Just like go be a little crazy. In safe ways.
Go
please.
Insane. Go insane. Throw some glitter. Make it rain.
A little insanity as a treat has never hurt anybody.
I feel like that is absolutely not the case.
Steven, what about you?
I know I've promoted it before, but it got a lore trailer, Jared. Timberborn, the Beaver Game.
Oh my god.
Go watch the lore trailer. 1.0 releases.
What is the lore?
It makes you feel things about these beavers. I'm being legitimately honest when I say this. This is not a euphemism. It's just beavers.
Steven has a lot of feelings about beavers.
I do. For my co-host Jared, this is Steven.
For my host Steven, this is Jared.
Protect the beavers.
God damn it.
Damn. Bye-bye.